This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
...to announce Joe Biden as his running mate. Obama and Biden, of course, went on to serve two terms as president and vice president. And this is it, the last day to renew your driver's license, learner's permit, or photo ID. If you haven't done so already, you are running out of time. Catch the HSHS St. Mary's Starlighting Ceremony tonight at 6:30 on our website and our Facebook page. That and much more at our website, nowdecatur.com.
He still can't erase their debt. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Another federal appeals court keeping President Biden's plan on hold to wipe out thousands of dollars in federal student loan debt for millions of Americans.
The appeals court allowing to stand a ruling 3 weeks ago by a federal judge in Texas that the plan is unlawful. But the administration is expected to appeal this ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court, having already asked the justices to consider a similar ruling from the Eighth Circuit Appeals Court.
Talks is Jack Callahan. Right about now, President Biden's ready to greet French President Emmanuel Macron for a meeting, then a formal state dinner tonight. And while they agree as key allies helping Ukraine fight Russia.
Tensions over the Inflation Reduction Act and changes that reward North American-made electric vehicles with tax credits over European ones will likely come up, though, as will Europe's effort to come up with a price cap on Russian oil.
Fox is Jessica Rosenthal. House Democrats are finally able to get a look at the Trump tax returns they've been after for years.
After the Supreme Court rejected former President Donald Trump's request to block the Treasury Department from making 6 years' worth of tax returns available to the House Ways and Means Committee, the Treasury says it has followed the court order.
Fox's Ryan Schmelz. Republicans could stop that review when they take over the House majority next Congress. The FTX founder, now ex-CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, says he was shocked the cryptocurrency exchange fell into bankruptcy, telling the New York Times via video from the Bahamas.
I was responsible, ultimately, for us doing the right things. And, I mean, we didn't. Like, we messed up big.
Well, Bankman-Fried, who's under civil and criminal investigation, claims there was no fraud. It's December, so there are 24 shopping days left till Christmas. We just found out consumer spending rose 0.8% in October when Black Friday deals were offered early. And another gauge of prices shows inflation easing a bit. And we also got an update on the first-time jobless claims. They fell last week to 225,000 tomorrow with a monthly jobs report. America's listening to Fox News.
Lisa Booth here for Bishop Gold Group. So just when you think the stock market's recovering and everything's going back to normal, well, here comes another downturn. So what are you going to do? The answer is gold. The company that I trust is Bishop Gold Group. They can advise you on investing in gold and gold IRAs. So act now and get up to $5,000 in free silver with a qualified purchase. Call Bishop Gold Group on your phone. Dial #250, keyword Bishop Gold. That's #250. Bishop Gold, or go to bishopgoldgroup.com.
This holiday season, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation delivers on its promise to do good and never forget the sacrifices America's greatest heroes have made for us with their annual Season of Hope. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve, the foundation will deliver mortgage-free homes to dozens and dozens of America's catastrophically injured veterans, fallen first responder families, and Gold Star families. Bring hope to heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org.
It's on to the Senate now for legislation the House has already approved to try to prevent a railroad workers' strike next week that could hurt the economy.
After a bipartisan majority in the House approved a resolution imposing a tentative labor agreement between rail companies and unions, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre is pressing the Senate to do the same quickly.
A rail shutdown would have a grinding effect on our economy.
The measure preventing a strike likely will need at least 60 votes to advance in the Senate. Lawmakers from both parties are expressing concerns over congressional intervention.
Our team is going to continue to work on that to make sure that we avert this.
The House did pass a separate measure giving rail workers 7 additional days of paid sick leave. That has been a key sticking point in labor talks. At the White House, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
There was a vigil last night in Moscow, Idaho, for the 4 university students found stabbed to death in a home more than 2 weeks ago. Stacey Chapin's son, Ethan, among the victims.
Make sure that you spend as much time as possible with those people because time is precious and it's something you can't get back.
Police have still not named a suspect in the murders. They have walked back an earlier theory that at least one of the victims may have been targeted. On Wall Street, stock futures are rising slightly the day after big gains. Just ahead of conference championship games this weekend in college football that set up the playoffs, an update on expanding the postseason.
The path is apparently clear for a 12-team college football playoff in 2024. According to ESPN, the Rose Bowl has agreed to terms on the expansion for the final 2 years of the current contract in 2024 and 2025. And now an official announcement of the early expansion in 2024 is said to be imminent.
That's Peter Schwartz. I'm Dave Anthony. This is Fox News.
Did you know 63% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck? Living this way causes tremendous stress. We want to help. At LLCU, we have over 30 certified financial counselors ready to help you create a budget, pay down debt, start saving, and ultimately achieve financial freedom. There's no charge, no obligation, because credit unions believe in people helping people. It's why we exist. Call or visit LLCU.org to begin your journey to financial freedom. Land of Lincoln Credit Union. Bank on learning more. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Here's a look at your News Channel 20 Storm Team forecast. Today's mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming sunny with a high near 40. Tonight, increasing clouds, low of 31. For Friday, mostly cloudy, high 54, wind gusts as high as 40 miles per hour. Then Saturday, sunny with a high of 34 and some more wind. Current temperature in downtown Decatur is 19 degrees. Your WSOY time is 8:06.
Good morning and welcome to the Thursday, December 1st edition of Byers & Company. We are officially the Christmas countdown, as hard as that is to believe. Hey, we're going to tell you all about Heritage Behavioral Health Center and their new CEO next.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
One of the after effects of COVID, and not that we're out of the COVID window, but one of the things that seems to resonate with me is this complete lack of time. Mary walked in the studios and I asked her, you know, how long she's been CEO of Heritage, and she told me 5 months. I'm like, oh my God, I mean, it feels like it was last week, right? And I don't know about you, but do you have like this, which I don't have the same sense of time I had 2 years ago.
Oh, I absolutely agree. When it was saying it December 1st, that this is starting my fifth month and that there's 24 days till Christmas, it was kind of overwhelming.
It's all right. Well, good morning and welcome. Mary Garrison, the CEO of Heritage Behavioral Health Center. You moved over from Millikan University. I can't imagine a campus life of higher ed, to running the largest, you know, behavioral health center in the community. I'm sure there's probably similarities.
You know, there are. And it's interesting. Some people were like, okay, how did that happen? But then others are like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. Sure. And partially why I think it makes sense is I've had a relationship with Heritage for about 13 years as a clinical supervisor, would go in and worked with them. And in my time at Millikan, did a lot of work in our community related to mental health and working with homelessness. And so, you know, they are both kind of big entities and fraught with a lot of the same successes and challenges just in different areas. And so I feel pretty comfortable right now.
Yeah, I was not surprised. I mean, just knowing your passions and, you know, what you care about and the things that you do in the community, I'm glad you're there. I think that, and this isn't anything about past, it's just I think new is good and thinking about things in a different way, coming out of COVID, mm-hmm. which I think acted as an accelerator in life that really, you know, took things that probably had an eventual shelf life and ended it much quicker than it would have normally. And I think healthcare and higher ed may be at the top of those, you know, list about how we'll do things differently. Let me ask you, I've been through this personally in my family. You know, this isn't unique to Decatur. There's not enough mental health resources to put a scratch into the number of people who need the help. Is that an exaggeration, or do you find that to be accurate?
I find it to be accurate. And part of the problem, as we're seeing across the country, is our workforce. But even prior to having that access to care for individuals and having enough providers, so it is a problem. And I think what we're seeing outside of, you know, coming through, if you will, COVID. One of the best things is people are realizing that it's okay to not be okay and to say I'm struggling.
Yeah.
But then that also means we need more folks to be able to see individuals.
Yeah, that's the trick question, right? It's like, you know, we talk about this all the time. As far as my company will and offer to you and anyone else all the resources we can to improve mm-hmm. the mental health of our community. Mm-hmm. My concern is you can raise awareness, you can get people maybe to take a step forward, you can get people to cross those thresholds and barriers they might have about stigma or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if there's not enough resources, what do you do? I mean, this is not an exaggeration. You know, there are people in this community that do come forward for help and they're told, okay, we'll see you in 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, when someone's in crisis, 12 weeks is a lifetime.
And we know, again, like you said, that first step to actually say, I'm needing help, you know, we know that if we don't do it right now, you probably won't come back. So one of the things we're doing, several things within our services, is if you come in and you're trying to access care, get you set up, and if you can't see someone for several weeks, we have some other resources where people will reach out. You may not be getting right into that particular service you need, but we're going to keep in contact with you, engage with you, so that hopefully when that door opens, we can get you in.
Okay. So this started in 1967, am I? About the same age.
Yeah.
It's
66 years we've been in business.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was reading that in 1967, the Alcoholism Advisory Council of Decatur area mm-hmm. was established to provide blah, blah, blah. In 1970, the mental health clinic became the Decatur Mental Health Center. Anyway, there's a long history of this.
Yes.
What surprised you, you know, moving into this top position? What was the thing that surprised you most?
How much Heritage does.
Okay.
All the programs. So again, being associated, I had kind of my niche and would go in and thought I knew a lot about what Heritage was involved in, but completely and pleasantly overwhelmed and just honored to be a part of an organization that has such robust services. We have over 32 programs that we offer. And so I think people know that we provide mental health services, substance use services, and that's about it. And that just, kind of what does that mean?
Okay.
And there is such a depth to that. We provide outpatient therapy for adults and children. We provide case management services within the community to individuals who are living in with severe and persistent mental illness. We have a lot of services that are wraparound and care coordination. So we have folks all over the community providing services. We have housing programs. We have employment programs for individuals who are needing that extra support. We work with the redeploy programs in the community. We work with the juvenile justice system. We have our crisis services, of course, and I think people are a little more aware of those services. So the amount of programs that we have, I think part of what I'm really looking at trying to do in my being new in my role is letting folks know that I was pretty surprised in all the contacts I'd made in my first 4 months of that people also didn't know, but I didn't know, and I was connected right to the organization.
Yeah, I think that because it started in a place where no one wanted to talk about it. I mean, we would go back not that long ago where people would say the C word. I mean, they wouldn't even say cancer out loud. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're fickle that way as people. Mm-hmm. We've come a long way, mm-hmm. I think, in the conversation about mental health. I mean, it's not unusual to turn on your TV and there's the owner of the, you know, the Colts, you know, with the campaign, or there's, you know, bigger names. You get people coming out. What was a big no-no, you know, like in the NBA where, you know, that was just something you didn't do. And mm-hmm. now they're seeing support for that. But once again, how do we change it? I mean, how do we fix, you know, the system out? the bureaucracy of sort of healthcare and how it's connected to the insurance company and how people get reimbursed. And it's almost like it's become like how all that works rather than what is absolutely best for the person you're treating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be cynical, but I mean, I feel like that's what it's grown into.
It is. It's very, very challenging when you look at, and when you look at behavioral health, the system is really kind of fraught with challenges of coordination. But one of the things that's happening across the nation and actually is here with Heritage is something called Certified Community Behavioral Health Centers, and which is helping bridge the gap between coordination of care, whether that be within our system of Heritage or whether that be with other providers in the community, so that we can say, okay, if we can't help you right here, we can get you somewhere else. What services do you want?
Right. And with the technology today, this is another thing. I remember my time as, I think it was when I was president of the United Way board, there was a young man, a really smart young man, who was trying to build an app company in this area where people would be phone to phone, like where you could immediately do this connecting without having to try to call an 800 number or hand somebody a pamphlet. We do things very 1950s. I mean, people go to the hospital. A drug overdose, right? They get Narcan, they come out and they hand them a pamphlet. And they go right back to where the environment they came from, which, you know, the overdose took place. And I feel like, why in the world? We've got the technology. We've got enough people that are passionate about this. Why would we not be able to embrace that person coming out of the ER who literally just died and was brought back to life and be able to circle them with services and a ride and transportation? And then everybody communicates with each other. Does that sound like a pipe dream?
No, not at all. And I will tell you that my colleagues and providers across Illinois, and I know the nation, believe we can do that. Partly where it comes down to is our funders and how the regulations we have. And regulations are important. We need them.
Listen, HIPAA is important.
Absolutely.
But HIPAA shouldn't stand in the way of somebody losing their life with a second overdose because we had help, but we couldn't let somebody know. I mean, that seems to be at odds with each other to me. But there's a lot of examples like that, or there might be duplication of services, or there might be services that are unaware. As you said, you know, you arrive, you learn a whole lot. I am sure that's the same all over the place. And so how do we communicate better? How do we know better? How do we work better to where it's one team?
Absolutely.
A community.
Because we are one team.
Yeah.
We are not in competition with each other. We all have to step up and say, who's the best to serve this individual? And maybe it's a multitude of us.
Sure.
Maybe there's multiple agencies that would do that.
All right. So what's the biggest threat right now? I know you treat, you deal a lot with addiction. You know, fentanyl clearly is a thing that, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, anyone even knew what it was. I mean, I think Prince might be the first time I, you know, even heard the drug, you know, in his overdose. What are you seeing now as far as treatment? You know, what's the biggest problem in this area right now?
I think, you know, as we are seeing similar indicators across the nation that fentanyl is a real problem. And you know, we come from a harm reduction model at Heritage. So
what does that mean?
That means that an individual, if they're using, we want to reduce the risk to them for an overdose. Ideally, we would love to have an individual be able to stop using, but that may not be realistic. They may not be ready. There's other barriers to that. And so if we can wrap ourselves around and have them engage with us in our services and help them maybe use a fentanyl strip to test what they're using to make sure that it doesn't have it in it, then at least they're alive. And so we're trying to work with our community and have a lot of awareness. We have programs and in the community that go out and talk about this and do training on Narcan and making sure that's accessible to people.
I there's even pushback, which is amazing to me. We recently, along with the Regional Office of Education and some other folks, they had a couple of experts come to town, one a former law enforcement, the other a former addict and a gang member and spent 12 years in prison, you know, and they talk about, you know, where we're of the age that we remember where people started doing something and then did something and then might go to heroin and then might be a heroin addict for a long time and might overdose. Now a 16, 17-year-old kid can, on a lark, try something in high school and be dead.
Absolutely.
And it is a different time, and I don't know that parents realize it. But there's some pushback even from some of our areas here in our own community. Our kids don't do that. We don't want Narcan in our schools. I mean, how out of touch are they?
It's real. It's here. And it is affecting everyone. And so, and I think that is the idea that not really understanding the risk that's there, that one time someone could lose their life. And it is very different. And what is coming in and what we're seeing is it's really high risk. And so I think that is our responsibility as a provider and in the community to continue that education and just keep speaking about it.
All right. If you could wave a wand, and do what needs to be done for the community and maybe the community can be a part of, help get this. I mean, what would you do? I mean, if you could just sort of rewrite the rules, and put a plan together for mental health for this community, what would you do?
Well, I would probably want to be able to have more staff to be out in the community. And so we have staff, we're doing incredible work and focusing on that, but
that's after people come to you.
Absolutely. But yeah. What can we do, for that, ongoing continuing education? Not just with one person going out and doing presentations, but really, having a framework for how we, address mental health in our community. And I think that's doable. What happens is our funding, there's not funding for me. I'm not providing a service that's being reimbursed by Medicaid or reimbursed by insurance. So it's really hard for us to have positions in our community that aren't just funded to do that. We need a grant that says, go do that and please do that. And this is what's expected. And if we're lucky enough to get one, we have a grant right now called it's Community Together. And an amazing program and work that's happening there across the community. That grant will end eventually. Yeah. And so then you do all this great work that staff have done, and then, oh gosh, we're done, and we don't get that extension, and that's a challenge.
All right, what's a virtual place of hope? I'm just looking at the Heritage website. I mean, how that seems to me, staffing, community, the easiest way to think about new communication and new ways to be in front of people is the device, their phone, their tablet, their laptop. I mean, that seems to me to be almost a silver bullet in being able to communicate without having to have lots more staff or people with the outreach going to where people are technically.
So we are looking to expand and see what we can do with telehealth. Obviously, COVID had us doing that.
Yeah.
But
can you believe we still call it telehealth? This is the thing that makes me laugh, because that it's sort of a symbol of just how behind the technology, and it's certainly in medicine, in the health system, they're not behind the technology in curing cancer. They're not behind the technology in doing all of the healthcare side of things. It's the interaction with people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think part of the challenge that, with COVID having kind of done that switch was important, but people weren't ready. I mean, just to say, get on and do this, there's a whole way to approach how you engage with people virtually. And the other piece that we have in our area is access.
Yeah.
People don't have, they have to go sit in a McDonald's parking lot to get access to Wi-Fi potentially.
Yeah.
And that's problematic, within our community and across the nation. So we have to make sure that just as access to walking into Heritage is available and talking to someone, that virtually people have the access to that. I can sit here all day and say, you can Zoom with me. You can get on.
Yeah. I know that that's an issue, but if 80% have virtual access, and you got to figure out how to get to the other 20% versus making 100% wait 12 weeks. I still feel like that's a winning proposition, not without struggles, but it's impacting more people immediately than not.
It is, absolutely, and take those steps and move forward in that. People also have to want to do it.
Maybe an easier way, though, doing it through a phone than taking the first steps of coming in your doors? I mean, maybe that is an easier step. I don't know.
It could be. It's going to depend on the individual. The other piece that obviously can work but takes training and education of providers and clinicians is how we assess people through a phone, right? We can only hear what you're telling us. We don't get that environment. And again, it's doable.
I think eventually there's got to be person to person treatment. I'm just saying initially, and keeping them in the door. I tell this story often because it stunned me when someone told it to me. And if you take this from a retail space and then put it into the mental health arena, Debbie Kazire, who a lovely lady, their family owns the Harley-Davidson store out north. And she told me a story one time about a gentleman, an African-American man, who came in and bought a Harley-Davidson and told her his story, that he had come to her shop on three different occasions and sat in his car in the parking lot and was intimidated to go in. It took him driving out there three times to cross that barrier in his mind that he didn't belong. He didn't see himself in this thing. He wanted a Harley-Davidson, but it was that intimidating to him that, you know, do you think about a guy sitting in a parking lot who's willing to buy a $30,000 motorcycle, but is intimidated about going in the front door? Imagine opening up about your mental health.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So I think any way you can get to people initially and let them know that there's hope, let them know that there's help, rather than this we'll see in 12 weeks thing. I mean, there's got to be some bridge to that gap.
And I believe we're doing that at this point in every way possible. But you're right. I mean, it's an ongoing process to be able to build that. And it takes to be able to do that virtually takes obviously the technology to do it.
Sure.
So there's all these facets, which, you know, when you say, okay, we'll do this telehealth piece, building that out, and that infrastructure and making that happen. Again, COVID, it was thrown at us, but there's better ways and more effective. But you're right. I mean, reaching out, that's what we need to do. And I think we are. But there's always ways to be able to do that.
I just think as a community, there's got to be a way to combine all the resources that we have and all the people who are trying to do good and make some unified front about tackling mental illness in our community. But to do that, that barrier's got to be set as low as we can for people to cross that threshold. And it can't be systematic. You know, and not only do you wait the 12 weeks, when you get your 12-week appointment, you go there and the wallpaper's peeling off and there's signs that say, pay your bill or you're going to be canceled. There's nothing about the environment that is inviting to someone having to open up about the most difficult thing in their lives. It is just clinical.
I would say our environment is inviting, and I want to make sure folks know that it's not a 12-week wait for us.
No, I'm talking about to get medication prescribed, to get, to get actual help.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because there's, and I'm not blaming the person, but there's one doctor that everybody's has to, one.
Yeah.
There's 120,000 people in this county. I mean, I don't know how in the world that this got so far down the priority list that that's all as a community we're willing to have.
Well, a couple things. It's stigma, and people putting, again, prior to COVID and even still, but saying that we're going to invest in the mental health.
Yeah.
People aren't understanding that, you know, our brain is just like, you know, my brain is having a problem, just like I broke my leg.
Yeah.
That
the difference is at the emergency room, they're not going to tell you to come back 12 weeks to get a cast.
Absolutely. And so how can we meet that? But then also there's just not enough psychiatrists. People are not going into psychiatry.
Right. There that and that I think is where maybe, you know, the virtual platform could be give me the smartest person. They don't have to live here. I mean, if I need to, you know, if talking to someone virtually can help me rather than not having enough people to talk to locally, that's got to be at least option B, right? All right. What happens when people walk in your door? I mean, what a walk in. Somebody comes in tomorrow and says, "Hey, I need help."
So we have an open access assessment program. So you can come in and say, I'm needing help, and you will be connected with a clinician who will do a thorough assessment to say, you know, tell me what's going on, and then help determine what services you would be able to engage in and how to go about that. So that hot handoff, here's what we want you. You can do this. Is this something you want to do? And if it's not us, we can refer them other places as well. One of the things about being a certified community behavioral health center or clinic is that it's improved our ability to complete that whole person, the mental health, substance use, and primary care. And we are actually providing primary care.
Now that's fairly new, right?
It is. Yeah. It just started. Actually, our two-year grant will end in February, but we got four more years. And so to enhance that, so we have been, it started during COVID and built out part of our building on our second floor to provide those services. So not only when you come in and say, I'm struggling with maybe a substance use issue or mental health issue, we'll help you there, but we're going to ask you about your primary care. And if you choose to do it with us, great. If you don't, we still think it's really important to coordinate with whoever your primary care provider is, because we've been separating that, right?
Yeah.
You come here for behavioral health, and then you go see
if it's two different primary
care doctor. And so it doesn't mean we have to do it. We hope to serve as many people as are in need, but we will then coordinate with the other services, whatever that individual is receiving within our community.
All right. We're out of time. It went by fast.
Gosh,
come back anytime you want.
Thanks,
and,
Brian.
However we can help. I know it's a big job to tackle, but I'm glad you're there doing it.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Mary Garrison, the CEO of Heritage. And we'll take a break for bottom of the hour stories and news. When we get back, Nick, we'll get into you sent me. I got like 22 pages to go through all the links you sent me in the Google Hangouts. We'll talk about that disparity, WNBA, NBA, and break it down by the numbers. Back with more right after this.
This is RJ Crace with your stories now. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital will be lighting their Christmas star tonight at 6:30 to honor and remember loved ones by reading names dedicated to lights on the star. The ceremony will be broadcast on our website, nowdecatur.com, and the Now Decatur Facebook page beginning at 6:30. Santa will be visiting four neighborhood parks next Saturday, December 10th, to do what Santa does, greet children, hand out candy canes, and collect letters. It turns out Santa doesn't just travel by sleigh, he also has a helicopter. His helicopter will be landing at South Shores Park, Hess Park, Garfield Park, and Hickory Point Golf Course. The first meet and greet will be at 10 a.m. and the final one at 12:15. For more info, visit nowdecatur.com. And we've got more stories, podcasts, and videos for you, even if you've been naughty this year, nowdecatur.com.
News. I'm Chris Foster. The Bidens host their first state dinner at the White House this evening for the President and First Lady of France. Emmanuel Macron's at the White House now for an Oval Office meeting.
Macron told lawmakers that U.S. industrial subsidies are, quote, super aggressive against French competitors. That's according to an AFP reporter who was in the room with Macron and lawmakers at a lunch yesterday ahead of the dinner and press conference happening later on today.
Fox's Jackie Heinrich at the White House. Tomorrow, President Biden plans to meet with England's Prince William and Princess Kate in Boston.
They're in the city to showcase the prince's initiative called Earthshot, a competition to find new ways to protect the planet and tackle climate change.
Fox's Carmen Roberts. A Commerce Department report on consumer prices shows inflation easing a bit. Fewer Americans, meantime, filed for unemployment last week, according to the Labor Department. America's listening to Fox News.
You can change someone's life this Christmas. Newell's Auto Body wants to gift a deserving person with a car this Christmas. It's Newell's Christmas wish. Simply go to nowdecatur.com and tell us in 100 words or less who you feel could most benefit from this gift. All entries will remain confidential. Newell's Auto Body realizes that having access to a vehicle can drastically improve someone's quality of life, whether it's for transportation to and from work or just having reliable transportation. Having a vehicle helps. In addition to winning a fully reconstructed 2010 Black Dodge Charger with bumper-to-bumper mechanical inspection, 6 months of auto insurance is also included. Newell's is driving home the true meaning of Christmas this year by giving a deserving individual this car. Visit nowdecatur.com for information on how to submit someone who deserves this vehicle. And for complete details, visit nowdecatur.com. A Christmas wish from Newell's Auto Body.
So, I'm about to graduate from nursing school, and you know what? Everyone is hiring nurses right now. But where's the right place to start my career? I want to be supported while I learn, with opportunities to grow. And I want a place where I feel valued. So, I'm choosing Memorial Health. Memorial has amazing training facilities, tuition assistance, and so many options for clinical experience. Want to be coworkers? Apply online at jobs.memorial.health/nursing. Memorial is an equal opportunity employer.
You're listening to Byers & Company, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
I feel like I'm in an after-school special.
was the old cowboy, the Marshall Tucker Band.
Marshall Tucker Band has one song.
I took a chance to see if they had two. I found out they do not.
No, they do not. Oh.
Don't win them all.
Huh. That is for sure. All right. Good morning and welcome. We're back here. Interesting conversation with Mary there. I don't know. We just have to do something about healthcare in this country. And, you know, so much of it is, you know, well, what do we get reimbursed for? And we don't get reimbursed enough for that, or we get reimbursed more. This concoction that I don't think was created on purpose. I think it just grows out of bureaucracy. You know, we just do it the way we've always done it. It's got to change. Has to. And if COVID doesn't do it by itself, Amazon will.
Yeah, we can't be one of the sickest countries and the most expensive countries at the same time.
First of all, this isn't about comparing country to country. There's no one doing mental health all that well in the entire world.
Right. And my point is that we have the resources to get in there and do it way better.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay. So you sent me the NBA versus WNBA comparison table. I don't know how recent this is.
2017 was the first one, which would just
give... No, this is November 9th, 2022. Oh,
was it? Okay.
Yeah. So, you and I were talking about this earlier, and I don't even know how we got into it. Soccer, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
Men's and women's. Mm-hmm. And the idea that... you know, what builds excitement about something? How do you get people? You know, I've been told most of my adult life that soccer's right around the corner here in America. And right around the corner shouldn't take 40 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And although we're closer, we're still around the corner.
Yeah. I think we can realistically see the corner if the corner's to be seen.
I've been told that. I'm just telling you, every FIFA World Cup, every the women doing the amazing things. What they won two, three if you go back, to the 90s with Brandi Chastain and all those, and I'm sure there were tons of young women, inspired to pick up the game and play, but it really hasn't on any realistic level broken through to be a major sport in this country as far as professional. It hasn't.
I think I would disagree to some level.
Then back it up with something, because when do I...
30,000 people going to Atlanta home games.
Where do I find it on TV? You know, what network deal do they have? Where is it in the sports page? You know, where is it, like if I go to ESPN.com and it's not World Cup time? Mm-hmm. Where is it if I go to Sports Illustrated if it's not World Cup time? It's not something that's covered on the regular.
It's covered every day on all the major sports. All the major sporting, you go to ESPN, the MLS scores are in the top swisher every day.
Okay. They're writing stories about the MLS the same way they are baseball.
No, I didn't say that.
Basketball.
That's not what I said.
Okay. Well, I'm saying if you're right around the corner, you're peeking around the corner, then the interest that would be garnered would be equal. Would it not? And they're making those decisions, by the way. It goes up into the top thing of the thing you got to go find rather than the big picture in the front story, because they are also selling content to the consumer and they're giving the consumer what they want.
Sure.
I'm not blaming them. Mm-hmm. They know the NBA is way more popular.
Right. And what you're finding now is in the case of soccer in the United States, Major League Soccer, men's professional soccer, it's being funded and supported now by NFL billionaires.
Yeah, it was being funded in the 70s when they were creating leagues, here in America. This is like the ninth iteration of leagues. I hope it breaks through. I'm not trying to be the pessimist here. I'm just saying it is so ingrained in the culture of so much of the world, and we didn't have that, and we grew up with so many different other things that you take a guy like me. I'm not watching that much sports. So here, I'm oversaturated. Just with the big ones. Do I watch college football? Do I watch the NFL? What, the NFL's on 5 days a week? Do I watch the NBA? Do I watch baseball? Soccer's not even in the conversation.
Yeah, but you just said you don't really pay attention to sports.
I'm saying that is the majority of Americans are not diehard eight sport watching fans.
Right.
right? Mm-hmm. So the people you got to sell occasional tickets to or get tune in, you know, to a game or get some numbers to sell some sponsorships. I just don't know that it will ever get, because it started in such a distant last place in this country versus elsewhere. The NBA's bacon in other countries that have had soccer forever.
Yeah, they're on the rise.
But how many choices do you have in Italy?
For what? Basketball?
There's no college football. There's no NFL. There's no baseball. There's no, I mean, you're not starting with five or six things ahead of you. You're starting with one thing ahead of you, soccer. And the NBA is such a different, I mean, completely different thing. So anyway, you bring it home. We got to talk about the comparisons and salaries and why there is still such a disparity in pay. And then if you go down the numbers, and this is the thing that Nick sent to me, there was a comparison table, right? I mean, if you start at the very first, it explains everything. Revenue. The NBA brings in $7.4 billion. The WNBA brings in $60 million.
10 of which is subsidized by the NBA. Yeah. They've operated at a loss.
But I mean, but just there's your biggest number right there.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars to not very many millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The average salary is $6.4 million for the NBA, $71,635 for the WNBA. Once again, go do the percentage of math of $60 million versus $7.4 billion.
Brittany Griner was the highest paid player.
$113,000 or whatever, yeah?
At that point.
Ticket prices, once again, average price for an NBA game, $89. WNBA, $17.42.
And there's way less games, too. Way less games.
Highest paid players, you mentioned Brittany Griner, $113,500. Now, Steph Curry's not making $40 million a year, is he?
Yeah.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
They're signing like billion-dollar contracts.
I didn't know that was, you know, I didn't know if that was upfront buy and bone. I mean, or is that just literally
NBA,
every
you
year?
You get the cash.
Okay.
You get the cash in the NBA.
Now, the average viewers, okay, here's another one. This one is just exactly what I was saying about soccer, right? Just because you have professional leagues and teams and people go see them doesn't mean it translates to big TV numbers, and that's where most of the money is still. Now, that will change, you know, with Amazon and everybody else getting into it. That whole structure will change. But the NBA Finals, 15.414 million people watching. The WNBA Finals, 231,000. Average attendance, NBA, 18,000. Remember, 18,000 paying $89 a ticket versus the WNBA, 6,768 paying $17 a ticket. The 2019 NBA Finals had an 8.8 rating, reaching those 15.4 million people. The 2019 WNBA season had a 0.6 rating, which was a 200% increase over the previous year. Doesn't even get them to a one. In our business, 0. anything is not good. Ratings-wise.
Right.
So I don't know. Who do you blame?
There's no appetite for it in that way. And I think that the league, well, first, women's sports started way later. I mean, so they're
okay. Yes, there is that maybe 100 years from now, when people don't even remember when it started, you know, there's a more level playing field or audience participation. But yes, Title IX, all of that stuff, that there has certainly been an increase in awareness, attendance, all of that.
You know, and if you take the breakthrough, which is the unicorn, the U.S. women's team, which is in the other article, their ratings have gotten up.
Yeah.
They are performing. It takes that inertia to make it kind of happen.
I would argue there's plenty of WNBA teams that have performed. When it first hit, the LA team was as dominant.
Sparks.
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't mean perform in their bubble. The U.S. women's national team performed outside of their bubble,
right,
too.
But they also had a lot of global fans, and they had a much bigger audience to partake than women's basketball.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm not trying to take anything away from them. I'm just saying they had a way bigger pool they were swimming in.
They've got to just keep chiseling away. And since that data, they've got a new collective bargaining agreement. They're making a little more money. And they are getting their ratings up. And men's soccer, which is, you know, another one that you know, we've been kind of talking about in this. They had their record year, like three or four teams averaged over 30,000 in attendance. They're going to Apple TV exclusively. They're up like 19% in viewership. I mean, they're there. They'd be like the ninth busiest MLB team.
Yeah. And baseball's crawling the other way. I get all that. I'm not arguing for or against.
See, they're around the corner.
I'm just asking. Maybe we'll see.
I mean, they're literally passing baseball teams in major markets.
Okay.
They're there.
They've not shown any sustainability for any length of time to do what's needed to be done to be in that top tier yet. And they may. I'm just saying that they're the greatest soccer player ever came here to play in the United States in the 70s when they were putting teams together in major markets. How many of those leagues have come and gone? Now, they may be better today, further along than they were. I just don't know. You would think we've done enough for it to break through.
And I think we're there.
Okay.
I mean, I don't even.
Can you name a single player on the men's national team?
No.
Okay.
But I'm not a soccer fan.
No, but I'm not an NBA fan, but I can name you players. I watch as much NBA as you watch soccer.
No. I watch no soccer.
I watch no NBA.
Right. I mean, but they're inherently famous. Okay. Basketball players are inherently famous.
Okay. I can name you hockey players, and I haven't watched a hockey game in 5 years. And I don't think they're at that place.
They have three teams averaging over 30,000.
We're arguing the wrong thing. I would rather talk about the men's and women's and why the WNBA, who's been around
for 25 years.
Long time.
25 years.
And so if they were going to break through, they've had stars, they've had franchises, they've had, and yet it's still here today what it is.
Yeah, the only thing they can do is stay the course. Hope that the game explodes globally like it did for the men. Hope that they can't even turn pro till 22. Hope that the feeder system builds the NBA.
Okay, can I ask you a fundamental question that's going to sound sort of sexist, but I really, honest to God, don't mean it. The game's not as explosive. It's not as fun to watch.
Yeah, and that is what most people say when you read the comments of this. They say it's slow, it's sluggish, there's not as much dunking.
You're not going to get Shaquille O'Neal. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get Michael Jordan. You're not going to get Steph.
Nope.
And that's not, it's not a slight. It's just a reality.
Right. They have great players. Very, very great players. Whoa. I haven't done that in like a year. Great players. It's just a different style game.
That's what they always said about the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
You go watch like Romania or something. It's like, you know what? I have no appetite to do is watch Romania.
Sure.
I want to watch the dream team get up in their sandwich.
Right.
I don't want to watch the fundamentals of good, solid basketball. I want the speed, the high-flying antics, the dunks, the alley-oop, the no-look pass. I want showtime.
Which is funny because that's usually the reason why people say they watch college and not NBA because they don't want all the things you just said.
No.
I hear that all the time.
You want to see people do things that you're not capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to you, baseball is the same way. I want to see the 300-foot home run.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting a baseball may be the hardest thing to do in all of sports.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I can watch women's softball at the Olympics. Can't remember if that's back or not. It went away for a while. It's just not the same.
Mm-mm.
It's a different game, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like maybe soccer is the evening out
thing. What about tennis?
Oh, for sure. Tennis, the women have been even though we've had the most boring men in tennis for the last 20 years. I mean, dominant, all-time greats, no personality whatsoever. I'd go back to McEnroe throwing rackets and Bjorn Borg and all of that heyday, Jimmy Connors, any day of the week over the last 20 years, as dominant as Federer has been.
Mm-hmm.
Boring.
Nadal.
Still, I don't feel like either one of those guys grew the sport. You know, in fact, if you look at tennis numbers, it's doing the exact opposite. It's shrinking. All the excitement's on the women's side.
Yep.
Every bit of it.
And the same complaints are that it's slow, it's prodding, it's not as athletic.
I don't feel that when I'm watching the Williams sisters.
I'm saying that's what you read.
Okay.
Because I read this stuff.
Yeah, I just go by what I watch and what I don't watch.
Right. Yeah, that's how you should.
If I watch Serena or Venus play for, you know, Wimbledon or the U.S. Open. I do not feel like I'm watching anything different than I'm watching the men play. When I watch WNBA, NBA, it's two different things.
Mm-hmm. It is two different things.
Jim Kimmons told me one time, sitting up at the booth in Forsyth. He was off that weekend for Father's Day weekend. He wasn't on the PGA Tour. And he said it was so amazing watching, and this was the Symetra Tour. These were professional women, golfers. He said the ball is so much slower than the men's. I mean, this is a guy who films it for a living.
Yeah.
He said tracking it was like, because he'd never been up close like that with, I mean, he worked every weekend on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, the strength, the speed, the velocity, it's not the same.
Yeah. And that doesn't matter when you knock one 4 inches from the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares about how fast the ball came in or the velocity, but in basketball and baseball, those things matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think soccer is, to me, the evening kind of thing that I would think could gain as big a popularity either way.
I think so.
The game itself is slow. There's athleticism for sure, but no one's got to dunk a basketball. No one's got to like hit a baseball 400 feet.
It's the same equipment.
Same equipment, same field, same everything.
Height doesn't matter. Speed doesn't.
Toughness, speed, all that matters. I'm stunned that they don't get, you know.
It's relative in that way.
Yeah.
Auto racing, another one where women are starting to.
Yeah. Really... I mean, you put me in front of a television set and take all the names and the emblems off the car. Can I tell you who Danica Patrick was watching a race? No.
No. Yeah, there's room for this. And I think that if the appetite grows, it brings up the other stuff. And the NBA, if they stick to this, they're great at marketing.
I feel like the WNBA is what it is. And I after 25 years, I don't know that it's going to be any more than what it is. Which 113,000, 80,000, 100,000, people sneeze at that. I mean, you play, half a season, do what you love, you get to play in a big market.
Then they go play overseas and make.
I'd stay away from Russia, but yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of options for that.
That is what they do, most of them.
Yeah. But I understand it. I mean, if you just look at the numbers. And if the WNBA tomorrow just started to go, all right, we're going to increase everybody's salary by 200%, they'd be out of business.
They'd be more subsidized.
What I'm saying is because that wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, the model
paying them more would not do anything for ticket prices or.
Their beef is the split. It's not that they expect to get the same money because they know they're not Steph Curry. They all will say that. They bring home about 20% of the revenue, whereas the men bring home 50%. And it's on a similar model.
Let me suggest to you that if a Shaquille O'Neal, if a Michael Jordan, if the modern day greats, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, where do you think that $7.4 billion is being driven by? The stars.
Right.
The players, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, if the WNBA players took that $60 million to $2 billion, they would be in a much bigger negotiation to get bigger chunks of the pie.
Of course.
So it is related.
You're right. I didn't say it wasn't related. I'm saying that's where their contention is. Well, not that our salaries should be millions. We're just saying of this portion, let us just have the appropriate share.
Okay, but then... what the WNBA owners would say is show us that you can drive the, I mean, we're operating in the hole and being subsidized. You're not driving income. Why would you deserve a bigger portion of the income when it's not coming from your performance?
Well, they have their incentives and reasons for actually keeping the thing going.
No, I'm just dismissing what I'm talking about. I'm saying that sounds like I want what the men are getting, even though I'm not doing what the men are doing to get that.
No, they have a reason for staying in business. The only way they, for whatever reason, at a loss, at a profit, for being able to look good. I don't know what their reasoning is, but if all those players walked away, they wouldn't be in business anymore. Maybe that's better for them. But they want to be in business. So just give us our cut, even if the cut is way smaller.
But that's what they're getting.
No, the pie is smaller. Just give us our same portion of the pie.
Yeah, but why?
It's a smaller pie.
But they don't have the same portion of anything. Why would they get the same portion of revenue? They don't have the same portion like on any scale of any of these line items. They do not even come close to having an even portion results. So why would they get even portion payment?
Because they are exclusively the talent. Without them, the league, it does not exist. Even if the league is not doing well or it's doing gangbusters, without them, there is no league.
There's nobody in college basketball right now that would go play in the WNBA if all those players went away.
If they had 7,000 in attendance, they'd have even less than that.
Okay.
I mean, they're not doing great. They're just saying, hey, we should be partners on this.
Okay. I think when you buy a professional sports team, mm-hmm. there's a certain amount of partnership, but the owner is still the owner.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just saying, hey, what we're the product.
Right. And I would say to them, you're getting 20%. You bring the product up 30% more, and we'll talk about giving you more.
All right.
You're asking to give 30% more in revenue to the players when they're only bringing in $60 million a year to begin with. And as you mentioned, 10 of that subsidized by the NBA.
Again, I don't know what the rationale is for even having the teams in.
I think there was a push to get women's sports and I think it's fine if you can operate at a profit, you know, when you're not losing money and you got 6,000 people that come to a game and they have fun and young girls have role models and these women can play professionally.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't have to be the NBA. The difference is when you have these expectations, you're going to get the benefits that the NBA gets when it's not even really the same thing.
Right. I mean, I understand that.
All right. We got to take a break. One last break. And then we'll announce our winner of our Jingle Bucks. Anybody can win. Daily winners. You'll have yesterday's winner you're announcing today. And then we'll do tomorrow. And then the $500 first weekend prize will be up for grabs. Nauticator.com. Simple and easy. Here's Nick with your News Channel 20 Storm Team forecast.
Today's going to be mostly cloudy to start, gradually becoming sunny, high of 40. Tonight, increasing clouds, low of 31. For Friday, mostly cloudy, high near 54, wind gusts as high as 40 miles per hour. And for Saturday, sunny with a high near 34 and some more wind. Current temperature in downtown Decatur is 25 degrees. Your WSOY time is 8:55.
Come to me, my proteins. This holiday season, give the gift of Heinkel's. For you, for your family, for humankind. Be a holiday hero with one of our meat packages. Featuring a delightful array of our award-winning products. Like the Tailgater Meat Package, only $40. Or the Holiday Hero Package, for just $80. And that includes our famous bone-in ham. And Hunter's Let Us Tame the Wild Taste with our custom boneless deer processing. Heinkel's, protein for me, protein for you.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So, while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Come celebrate Christmas at GT Church. Carols by Candlelight is on Christmas Eve at 6 and 9 p.m. and is packed with music, ballet, a story for the kids, and lots of things that will fill you with the joy of the season. And then on Christmas morning at 10 a.m., we'll be celebrating Jesus' birthday and receiving communion together. Make GT Church a part of your Christmas traditions on Christmas Eve at 6 or 9 p.m. or on Christmas morning at 10 a.m. For more information, go to gtchurch.com.
You're listening to Byers & Company, only on WSOY, 1340 AM and 103.3 FM.
All right. We're literally the last minute and a half here. Who is our $25 daily winner for our Jingle Box with Hickory Point Bank Invested?
Bailey Nichols.
Bailey Nichols. Like that name. That's a great name. By the way, just closing things out on this, and I had no idea. This is my own ignorance. They only play 36 games a year.
Exactly.
The WNBA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I really, honest to God, didn't. I mean, it makes the argument even sillier in some of these regards compared to seasons, you know, 81 versus 36.
Exactly right. It works in both ways.
Yeah. That's how little I pay attention to it. And it's not intentional. It's not like I go, oh, that. Ugh, never do that. Just not in my realm. Women's soccer, I'm all over it. Women's tennis, I'd much rather watch Serena or Venus than Roger Federer any day of the week. All right, that's it for us. If you're listening to the show today, podcasts are driven by the Bob Brady Auto Group. You can get them at Nauticator.com or wherever you get your podcast. We will see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening.
WSOY Decatur and W277DB Decatur. WSOY, 1340 AM and 103.3 FM. Streaming live at NowDecatur.com.
This is RJ Crace with your stories now. Starting at 8 a.m. on Monday, December 12th, petitions for the Richland Board of Trustees may be filed for next April's consolidated election. The board positions appearing on the ballot are three full six-year terms for seats currently held by Wayne Dunning, Bruce Campbell, and Ben Andreas. The election is coming up next April 4th. Its colleague of the month time at Decatur Memorial, Carol Hens, a cafe associate with Food and Nutrition Services at Decatur Memorial, is the hospital's colleague of the month for November. She's been working at DMH since 2010. She was not.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.